I think in general, we really need to think about in this country how we're birthing. Is it really about hurrying up and get that baby out? Or is it about allowing a woman's body to do what it's supposed to do that she can, so that she can bring forth this baby in the time that she's supposed to be doing it in the safest way possible?
Paula Azelt, in the film, you have expectant mom Felicia Ellis from Tulsa, Oklahoma, saying a black woman having a baby is like a black man at a traffic stop with police. In Oklahoma, the maternal mortality rate, black maternal mortality rate, is double the national average. Talk about this in the Momnibus bill in Congress.
Yeah.
And we have 30 seconds.
Okay, so the Momnibus bill, set of bills in Congress, would be the largest investment in maternal health, specifically black maternal health, in this country. It would improve access to midwives, as we spoke about before, increase the complete perinatal workforce, create more culturally congruent care. So that's allowing more black midwives into the space and more educational trainings. It would extend postpartum coverage throughout the country. Right now, Medicaid in some states only cover up to 6 weeks, and we know that women can die up to 1 year postpartum. So that collection of bills would do a tremendous amount to cut down this mortality rate and improve birthing for all American women.
Paula Izelt and Tanya Lewis-Lay, a fantastic film, co-directors of the new documentary Aftershock, now streaming on Hulu. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. No, I was
I wasn't sure which one of us was going to keep speaking. Good morning, everyone. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3. And everywhere, www.kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste, and I'm here with Cecil. That's who you heard saying this morning, not my alter ego there,
oh,
but my cohort in conversation.
Yes, it is. And today is Monday, the 25th of July, and, you know, I am live and in person, and it is really me, so, which is a hint about what something we might talk about this morning. But let me, before we...
Well, how do you know you're you?
Oh.
Is it because you think?
I think, therefore, I am.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we do not...
There goes soon.
What if we do not think? What is...
Well, how would we know?
Brain activity. But that, would we still be?
Well, we might be something. We may not be aware of ourselves. But is that awareness of ourself enough to call us here? Us? I don't know. But anyway, lots of people have written papers about it, books about it, movies about it, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, let me say that, you know, that those thoughts are serious questions for me throughout my life. I first remember having that thought about who am I when I was a child, and looking at my hand and saying, well, am I my hand or not? And then looking at other parts of my body and trying to find out who I am. And at that time, I came to the conclusion that I was my eye, because somehow I perceived the world through my vision. Later on in college, the thought continued, and I found myself reading Jean-Paul Sartre, and the novel that's translated in English as Nausea. And I remember sitting in my dorm room for what seemed like days, just stunned by that sense of angst, of inability to say, who am I and why am I existing, or if I exist. So then I decided to major in philosophy and, you know, found all the answers. So.
Did anyone ask you to write a paper about your answer?
Well, yeah, we, you know, for a thesis, but, you know, that's a whole other story. But
well, no, actually, not exactly. Our topic today, once again, because I just want people to be aware of how much artificial intelligence is pervading our lives. And, you know, it keeps, I won't say surprising me. I think the articles that I'm reading are amusing me, because despite all of our fears, you know, we human beings, we're just going to rush right off the edge of that cliff like so many lemons, you know. We've seen that there could be potential dangers. We've imagined there could be so many dangers. And we write papers and movies about so many dangers. Yet we proceed to march right down that line. Well, not long ago, I was reading an article, and I had to send it to Cecil. And you've heard me talk about how Google has placed the engineer who determined that their particular AI was alive, and it was a sentient being. And, of course, there was a lot of scoffing and laughter ensued. But here's the other thing. Just recently, maybe about a week or two ago, I shared an article with Cecil where a AI program was asked to write a paper about itself. What could it write a paper about being sentient? And it did. It produced a white paper that was very well received and actually has thrown some people for a loop, because it seems to actually be sentient. The paper was of such a quality that the authors that read it seem to think that we may have some contenders for being sentient, not just animals, not just people, not just plants. Yes, plants are sentient, y'all. But AI. So how does that make you feel, Mr. Philosopher?
Well, if it thinks, therefore it may very well be. And I think that slowly that we are moving into this different reality in terms of how we exist. And, you know, here again revealing my age, but it's sort of like, oh, I remember when I was a kid and watching sci-fi movies and cartoon shows such as The Jetsons, and wondering whether or not we would have a robot. And as I said that, my computer, my laptop here started to speak to me, because it heard something and it started to respond, but I turned off the audio, so it's speaking to me, so, but I can't hear it. So it's like really weird. It's sort of like
I'm sorry about that. That's what I'm talking about, you know, just these little moments. Now, right now, it still feels like it's in the realm of sci-fi, even though I've seen articles and repeats of that article in various forms of media. But nonetheless, you've got the scientists who created a Google AI platform being fired, pretty much, for saying that it's sentient. And then other people saying, well, their AI programs are starting to talk to each other or develop something akin to sentience. Mm-hmm. And now we've got the the robot writing a white paper about itself. Or I shouldn't say robot, you know, the AI, because I don't want it coming after me and telling me that that's not what it calls itself.
Right. It might not be appropriate language.
Might
for,
not.
For AI robot. It might be a slur, but...
Well, anyway, what we want to do is talk to you about your thoughts as they keep, I won't say developing, I want to say unraveling, just to be mischievous. But, you know, as AI keeps presenting more and more elements of sentience, what does that do for us and our humanity? You know, one of the big things that you hear a lot of people who are sounding alarms about AI sentience is that they are concerned about us becoming mechanized ourselves, and that ideas of what humanity is becoming less clear. And there are a lot of people who do augmentations to their body. You've seen people put these various chips in their body to pay their bills, open doors, have other forms of machinery respond to them. And that's one form of augmentation. You've seen these new prosthetic devices that give people who have lost a foot or leg agility and mobility advantages over some human beings, because some people use specialized feet to do specialized tasks, like climb mountains. They have feet that are kind of like the
hitan and the, you know, the little axe.
Yes.
You've seen people run on the track with them or play basketball and leap very high, you know. And so we're wondering sometimes if the line between humanity and artificial intelligence or machines is blurring more and more by the minute. And one of the things that can cause is maybe less appreciation for the real human being. But we're wondering, what are your thoughts? You can give us a call at 503-231-8187 and join the conversation. Now, I do have another topic. I'm going to sneak on you.
Oh.
I'm going to sneak on you. And I was reading another article that was talking about moral outrage and how so many people are feeling it this day, but also the fact that, I don't mean moral outrage, I mean moral injury. And I'm going to send you this article, Cecil. I read it a couple of days ago, and I thought, oh, man, I do want to use this for a KBOO topic on More Talk Radio. So I'm going to send this to you. But in the meantime, you know, we want to tell people, get in early. It's 8:14. Come on, call. Give us a conversation, because we know a lot of people have thoughts about these things, and then they get excited about the topic, and then we're out of time. And I don't like, you know, having to cut people off, but I do appreciate the fact that they do call.
Well, let me ask you, Celeste, since you are a connoisseur of technology and all, do you sense that there is a generational divide in terms of how we approach, respect AI and other devices? Well, hold on to that response right now. I think we have a couple of callers who would like to speak. So let's go to Molly. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning. Cecil, and good morning, Celeste. Well, I must say I look forward to your show. I used to love the Joan Abe show. It was so mentally stimulating to listen to. And now you're my favorite show, I might add. But
well, thank you.
Artificial intelligence. Well, we're artificially connecting here over radio waves and, you know, just sort of this brave new world. And but what I want to say, my recent experience that just came to mind when you mentioned your topic for today, is I've discovered Google Books and a way to make photo books from my experiences and trips and everything. So I just recently made a book, and I took all the pictures that I wanted to create this book, and there were 500 and something pictures, which was, and the book only puts 200. It took basically half of my pictures. But my point is, I wanted to put every one of those pictures in the book, and I never could have made the decisions of what pictures to put in. And the artificial intelligence, the algorithms or whatever, however that did it, chose certain pictures, and I thought, well, I think I'm just going to go with this, because it took out my emotional connection, and it did a good job, actually, of picking the photographs. In fact, I was amazed at the fact that it did pick the assortment of photographs that covered the topic that I wanted to create with my photo book. So it was like, okay, I can work hand in hand with this artificial intelligence, I guess. You know, just going with it hand in hand.
Well, you know, what's interesting is the fact that it created something that you liked and you approved of, and
right. It
may have taken out the emotional context of picking the pictures, but it sounded like the pictures that it picked still had an emotional connection for you. So
right. And
it evoked one, and that's what I get at. It's like, wow.
Well, you know,
so I thought I would just share that, and I want to say something else. It's a little off topic.
Well, hold on, Molly, because I also want to affirm in terms of the, like, photo thing that happens, though. So I like to take photos myself, and it's sort of like it, you know, creates this photo album. And I said, yeah, I guess that's what I wanted, and you know, video photo thing. And so like, oh, okay, let's work for me, I think.
Yeah, well, you do get to partake in it because it chooses which pictures to make big, and then you might have three on another page, but then you have the choice of picking the arrangement of those three pictures. So you get to partake a little in the making of the book, but the artificial intelligence does the book. I mean, and it's wonderful. It's different than a photo album. It's an actual book, and it's a great thing. I'm happy with it. It's something that we wouldn't have had in another age without these computers, technologies, and everything. And even the radio wave, I want to just get back to, because I really appreciate your show, and I want to say I remember the caller that mentioned that he likes the meetings, Zoom meetings, where you talk but you're not seen, because he was African American and he could be seen for, he could be listened to for the person that he was and not judged in any way by his color of skin. And I just want to say how much I appreciate engaging, because, you know, I am a white person, but listening to a show that is, there's just not enough interaction between the different peoples, and I mean all peoples, but I'm getting a little caught up in my words. I think you know what I mean. I appreciate the ability to speak with you on your show.
Well,
one
thank
person
you.
In the human race, and all the artificial intelligences out there too. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate talking to you. But you know something that's really interesting about what the caller said is that, and this is actually an article sitting in my hopper here, is that for a lot of us folks of color, there may be some really tangible differences in our tones and timbres of our voice. And I have had people call up and not want to talk to me because they assumed that I was black. And so I would do something that my mom did, which is pull out her white voice. And sometimes I deign to do that because it's like, nah, you're going to work with me on my own terms. However, if it warrants it or if I'm just in the mood, I might pull out my white voice just to practice. I take a lot of the lower register out, and it's hard to tell. And you've seen comedians do it all the time. Dave Chappelle, Wanda Sykes are just two of many.
I think that's one of those things you learned very early on in terms of how to survive in this society is your white voice and your, you know, just different ways in which people interact in order to survive and prosper even in our society. Lessons learned on your grandmother's knee. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking about artificial intelligence, the pros and cons, and our experiences with it. Our last caller, Molly, shared her experience in terms of how it helped her create a photo album, a photo book. And earlier on, and so she thought that was a good thing, something useful. Before Molly called, I asked Celeste whether or not you sensed there was a generational divide in terms of acceptance of technology, and I would like to hear what you think, Celeste.
Well, yes, I do. I do think there is. You know, I look at my youngest brother, actually, and he's a computer engineer and builds networks and stuff for big companies and the government. And his house is wired for everything. He was, you know, our youngest boy, and he was fascinated by all things technology as a kid. And so, like the rest of my siblings, he went into like hard science application. And his house is wired for everything. There's all kinds of ways in the house. So the printer is wireless, the TV is wireless, the water faucet works by wireless. And then if you're doing all that, and you have all those advances in your house, that means you also have some form of AI running it. My younger sister's husband drives a Tesla, and they have all this AI equipment in their house, and they speak to things, and the things speak back. Some of their machines talk to each other, and I'm fascinated by it, but I'm a little less trusting. I like people. So and they're the youngest is I think right on the edge of boomers. And then their kids are definitely, I mean, they're designing things and working with creating and coding and building AI systems. And so I see that in a lot of younger generations. They prefer having these machines as help and servants and co-creators. But, you know, all of us who are a little bit older, I won't say all, because there are a lot of people who are older than I who are very much into AI. So, yeah, but still, okay. It's a generational thing. Because most of us are some of us, I would say, are the folks who are sounding the alarm. Beware, beware, you know, don't let AI take over your life.
Sure, and I'm sure just as a prior generation talked about, oh my gosh, these horseless vehicles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller on the line. Let's see what they have to say. Good morning, caller. Sam?
Good morning.
Yes.
Appreciate this conversation. I'm a native here, and I just want to just lay this out real quick. So, this is not a generational issue. This is about focus and purpose in life. Just as you correct your voice and put on your white voice to not be detected for who you are, that's a form of AI in the most primitive sense. So when the goal in life is to become superhuman, then the human being is going to use everything within his power to obtain that goal. You had mentioned Generation X. And Generation X is like the hidden generation, because we were the generation, yes, the first generation, especially of black men, who were never afraid of white people, Caucasians, and their systems, never wanted to be integrated into it, and always had our own culture. But we were jailed and killed. So there's a few of us left. And those few who are left, we watched every form of technology come in. We were born when there was no TVs, and we watched TVs come into the home. We watched it all. So this is now merging so that we can become superhuman. And this is not the first time this has happened. This is just the latest epoch of this happening. And we're digging up civilizations in the sand, in the oceans, that are showing you that this is not the first time that we have ramped up AI and become superhuman and launched off into planets into space. And that's why we know about these things. We have been so misserved in how we have been taught and educated that we have been forced to have to seek out our own data. And when we are lied to so much because we do not have access to the tools to be able to test these things, then we just speculate. So I'll leave it there and let you all continue. Thank you for the program, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You put a lot there on the table of not only talking about generation, I'm talking about how people survive and how black men survive and the challenges of AI and how we create our world. You know, and I'm not sure I'm going to go off topic, but it's related to what you were saying, I think. And if it's not, then pardon me. But as he was speaking, I saw a lot this weekend about the Comic-Con convention in I think it's in San Diego. They was talking about it was the first large one since the pandemic, and everyone was, there in costumes and masks. And, you know, I thought, well, a lot of people are wearing masks, so do they check the people under their face masks to see if they have masks to prevent, well, you know, I didn't want to go down that hole, but I also think I was wondering, you know, one of the things about Comic-Con was it reveals new things that are going on, and it had the first trailer for the Black Panther sequel, Wakanda Forever, and it's sort of like, you know, one church I know said, oh, maybe we need to have a church day where we all go see when it's released. But as the caller was talking about how black people have been used, abused, and how our culture has been captured or ways in which different cultures attack, I thought of Wakanda Forever, and of course, you know, nerdy me is looking forward to that.
Well, also, one of the things that I pulled out of what our last caller said was it's something that I mentioned before about the thinning of the line and our loss of humanity.
Yes.
And in terms of our loss of humanity or the pending loss of humanity, you know, he hit the nail right on the head as far as people of African descent and many other folks with different forms of melanin in it. You know, we still don't even have full humanity yet. And so for some people, we're wondering, well, what is a robot going to go through what we went through? Will AI have forms of discrimination? You know, will it be subject to discrimination? Now, I will say this, right now they're trying to correct the fact that AI in its communications and its implementation of its algorithms does exhibit what looks like racism, because it has a hard time looking at images of dark-skinned people and either seeing them or reading them as human.
Yes.
And, you know, I assume that, well, I won't say I assume, I'll just say I read and see that is the bias that comes from the people who make the AI system. You know, just like they discovered that the people who build photographic equipment would not build it to read properly as human and read and light properly dark skin, would also build in their same prejudices in AI.
Right.
You know, and so AI right now, as it is created, it does not have any respect for dark skinned people. And there's a lot of us who look at that and just go, business as usual, huh? Let me see. Now do I have to start wearing white face when I wear my white voice?
Yes. Well, I think it reveals, as you just said, in terms of, you know, what you may receive from it is what you put into it. And so it reflects the biases of those who created it. And so we are not surprised that they are not able to accurately see, and I'm using air quotes, dark-skinned people and a lots of things around that. I'm thinking about going back to the last caller, and he was talking about how, and I'm projecting a little bit, in terms of black men in the 80s and how only a few survived because, you know, the crack epidemic and the school-to-prison pipeline and all. And I'm wondering whether or not this continuation of state-sponsored terrorism against people of color, it is dangerous in terms of, well, what are the outcomes of where is it headed? You know, I just see, you know, and this is maybe more than a sci-fi movie, but in terms of the control of people of color. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 on your radio dial. This is More Talk Radio, and with Celeste, and I am Cecil, and let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I actually just wanted to just bring up a little bit of information on the biasness that AI has with the facial recognition software. It's kind of interesting because you can and this is the thing with the AI and the programming. There's a book called Dune, and one of the main teachings in it is that the program is only as good as the person who programmed it. So, kind of all the biases that we're seeing, right, with the facial recognition software, ironically, it's happening in China. Same kind of thing. The racial recognition software in China is not being able to identify white people properly. and it's funny because it's through the AI that the Chinese developed, and so they're missing. So the biases are there as well, and it really comes down to who's making that racial recognition software and whatever biases they have. So I just wanted to bring that up because there was a really interesting article talking about the Chinese software not being able to differentiate the white people very well. So,
Wow. Hey, thank you so much.
Yes, thanks for your call. And there it is. What was the term I learned when I first started studying computers? Garbage in, garbage out. You mentioned it earlier, you know?
Yes.
There it is. And we all have our blind spots, our prejudices, et cetera. And so I'm not surprised that they're dealing with it with the Chinese AI, but at the same time, that just points to a degree of how we ourselves are moving perilously fast toward this cliff as lemmings with dehumanizing ourselves, and it's a frightening thing to realize we are so-called arbiters of conscience and consciousness and sentience, but we don't always manifest it ourselves.
Yes,
it's like what was that our moms and our grandmothers would say? You know, a bump on a log is smarter than you. You know that lesson to a bump on a log. You know. Something like that. Okay. Anyway, join us in the conversation. The number is 503-231-8187.
Let's
and
go
our
to...
conversation. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let's go to our next caller.
Okay. Good morning.
Dale, good morning.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I wanted to follow up just briefly on something Celeste said about the photography and the inability back in the day to really photograph brown-skinned people well. It just could not get our skin tone right because of the way the technology was developed, the lighting and everything you have to do to take photos of people. Well, I don't have the source right now. I was trying to frantically find it, but I do specifically remember hearing some years ago that was a problem that was solved only because there was a need to start photographing furniture. I don't know if it was, importing, exporting catalogs or what, but mahogany, which is a beautiful dark brown wood, was not easily photographed in the light metering technology they had. So that, and only that, furniture drove the need to photograph brown-skinned people better. It was furniture the savior. So that is what I heard, and it was a really valid resource. That was some time ago, but like I said, I could not find it in the time to call you. So well, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, because as you share that with me, you say, like, okay, so therefore, dark-skinned people only became valuable because furniture was valuable. And
yes.
And,
that's
yeah.
so scary.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys have a good day.
Well, no, wait, before you go, check this out. There, a friend of mine who puts together film series here in town had brought a movie to town by a director, Andrew Dusunmu, and Dusunmu, and it's called Mother of George. What made this film so spectacular is it was one of the first films, and it's an African director, African film. It was one of the first films that was able to capture all of the richness and vibrancy and the spectrum of skin tones of African people. And the movie itself is a good movie. It has a great plot, but it was just so well lit. And, you know, that should never have to be a category in a film series or any kind of critique or awards of film. It lit the dark-skinned people very well. So I'll give it 2 thumbs up.
and I just did a quick search, and you can watch it streaming on various streaming services for free.
It's a good movie.
Free.
It is worth watching.
Could you repeat the name of the movie, please?
Yes, it's Mother of George.
Okay. Very good. Okay.
It's about a Nigerian couple, and it's a movie I really enjoyed.
Okay. Excellent.
Came out in
2013. Okay, I'm going to look for that. And what you say in Hollywood, you know, that's been a problem. They've been addressing it pretty well by hiring people of color to do their makeup and to do their hair, you know, and to have those positions. So yeah. Okay. Anyway. Well, thank you all.
Thank you so much. And yeah, it's interesting. Okay, so I have another movie to watch on my vacation. Thank you, Celeste.
There you go. So so I want to get back to this thing. You could find this article carried by a lot of different newspapers. I read it in Yahoo and MSN and the Sun, the U.S. Sun. And it basically, it's about an AI bot who wrote a paper about it itself. So this Swedish researcher asked this AI algorithm, and I believe it's named GPT-3 to write a 500-word academic thesis about itself. And the researcher, Almira Thunstrom, said she was surprised that it did it. It was well-written in academic language, well-grounded references, cited in the right places and everything. And it was so good, she wanted it published in a peer-reviewed academic journal. And here's the thing, though. You have to ask permission.
Yes.
So she asked the AI permission if it would allow the authorship to be released and the publication of the article. And the AI said, sure. Well, it probably didn't say sure, but you know, it did give permission. And she said she was really surprised because she was already panicked because she didn't think it had that much awareness. And so she asked it directly if it agreed to be the first author of this paper. Now, here's the thing. it's really kind of scary because she wasn't sure what she'd have done if it said no.
No.
Because that in and of itself might have indicated a degree of sentience, perhaps a higher degree. I don't know. What do you think?
Wow.
But just the fact that it could be sentient is a little distressing because, again, how do you determine its rights? When what was the first robot who was also it came out of the Middle East? It was an Arab robot, woman robot. Was it Sophia? Is it Sophia? I'll have to do a quick search here. And it carries on conversations. Now it can get knocked off if it talks to AI, another AI bot. Every now and then they devolve into either machine language or what we would consider nonsense. So I'm beginning to wonder, is it nonsense? Are the machines talking to each other and thinking, what did your person ask you? Well, my person is a dweeb, so they didn't ask me anything intelligent at all. I just ignore them. I'd rather talk to you.
And I thought the first robot was Rosie the robot. But in the meantime, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you are on the air.
I think that the issue is not so much what we define as life or not life, intelligence or not intelligence, but what is the motive behind those who are developing the artificial intelligence devices and processes?
Yes.
And my concern is that it's not typically controlled by those who made money and power through reverence of life and a commitment to social justice and caring for, regenerating, and healing our planet. They're using an incredible amount of resources that we don't have that water and energy to have food, but instead have laid a spine on people. In 1981 and 1982, from my time in Washington, D.C., I learned that George Herbert Walker Bush and others were having corporations that were stronger than the KGB and CIA and being able to spy on people and control governments and resources and water, etc. And I would try to tell folks how they were using our computers or else, and phones and things. And it made me sound like I was a total crazy. And people couldn't believe it and wanted to dismiss me. And now if I say the same thing and point out the same facts and observations and quotes from, you know, the real people involved, people say, yeah, of course, everyone knows that. Duh. But no one seemed, then when they denied it or now when they deny the importance of it, to really care about what the potential consequences are and what we need to do to mobilize for justice and for life. I mean, we're just up the Columbia River. We have sun and wind and hydropower for electricity for the NSA and Google and Yahoo and drone companies and other stuff. They're not doing that for our greater good. And then when people don't want that, they could easily say, hey, you know, we have landfills, we have shifting ground, we have coal trains and oil trains coming through there. We could have an easy derailment just from natural circumstances or someone encouraging it by putting some pebbles on the tracks. We have miles of fires and a destroyed Monterville Dam and destroyed of Portland. You know, there's just so many things that could happen to say, stop using your drones to kill us. Stop starving us. Stop poisoning us. So I think we need to really look less at, you know, what is or isn't intelligence and life and things like that, which I care passionately about in all my life. But when it comes to action and mobility, mobilizing each other, we need to talk about what's the motive and purpose and what are we going to do to forward our purpose for the greater good.
Very, very well said. Thank you.
Yes. You know, and that's one of the reasons why we're having this discussion, because the way things are shared with all of us regular folks, it sometimes feels like it's just being shoved down our throat. You know, we're not the ones who are involved in developing it, although they tell us that this is something that we want, to better our lives. And, you know, they're not listening to us when we say, well, you know, one element of bettering my life is a living paycheck, or like you said, clean water, clean air. And I don't see a lot of energy to really ask us. I mean, that's even one of the things we talked about a little bit ago, is how employees and opinions about things are starting to count less. We had a hot minute when it was important, but that's gone now. And so, you know, people are looking at the dangers of AI, recognizing all the ways that it diminishes our humanity, and still doing it. And so I'm not sure how we encourage and exhort people to be very mindful of it, besides just keeping it in front of, you know, the conversational face, you know, keep holding up the mirror and saying, hey, let's be more purposeful and intentional. Anyway, what do you think, Susan?
I just wanted to see if our caller is still on the line. Oh, just wanted to know if you had any response. Caller?
I don't think she is still on the line.
I think
she brought up a very valuable point, and that's why we're one of the reasons why we're talking about it.
Indeed. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Listener, sponsor, volunteer, run community radio station. And coming up, if you're listening live, following our program, is the OMO Variety Hour. And today, Norm Diamond hosts this episode of the OMO, which includes segments on inflation and its cures. Inflation is rising. What is the cause? And what is the Fed role in this? Bill Resnick talks to Gerald Epstein, a leftist economist, to talk about critical needs to the current economic management. There would also be a segment on youth versus ODOT. You remember a few weeks ago, thousands of Portland students went on a climate crisis strike, and groups such as Sunrise PDX have targeted the ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, as a climate villain, and their reaction to recent city council hearings on the proposed freeway expressions. July 26th is Vince Ramos, the Cuban national holiday. There will also be a segment on that. All of this on OMO Variety Hour, which follows this programming. If you are listening live on Monday, the 25th of July. In the meantime, you're speaking to Celeste and you're speaking to Cecil, and we're talking about AI. And I want to talk about human intelligence and give a thanks to Tammy, who came in this morning to be our engineer this morning. Thank you for getting up on a day when you did not necessarily need to do so, and appreciate you much. Thank you, Tammy.
Yes, indeed.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. If you are a bot, you are also welcome to call, but we would like to hear human voices. But, you know, we don't know when you call whether or not you are human or AI. So give us a call.
Oh, the AI will use its human voice.
Yes, there you go. 503-231-8187. We have a few minutes left if you have some thoughts to share with us this morning. So, Celeste, are you worried? Are we concerned? Is it we just, you know, this is where we're headed, and how do we live into this new reality? And
I don't know if I'm the one to ask, because, you know, I just kind of like, I won't say I go with the flow, but in my worldview, this has to happen. So I'm just, what I do is I try to get the proper insulation so it doesn't affect me negatively, and I try to learn as much as my little brain will hold about it so I can figure out how to interact with it. Mm-hmm. For example, an article I had pulled up is about how there is a little sticker that can be used to fool image recognition technology. And so these researchers have fooled the algorithms into confusing two skiers for a dog, or a baseball for espresso, or turtle for a rifle. So, like, I'm reading stuff like that, so I can figure out, okay, how can I confuse AI so when they look at me, they don't see who I am, they just see whatever image I want it to see. You know, that's me. Yeah. What can I say? What can I say? I'm already trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to use my white voice, to use an analogy, to fool AI. Because I don't mind being mistaken for a toaster, you know, a walking toaster or somebody's cup of espresso. Because that way AI will be coming after me. It won't know who I am.
Oh, boy. Who are you? You are a piece of furniture, perhaps.
Mahogany furniture.
Mahogany.
Bring it full circle. Bring it full circle. I'll have some kind of coating on my face so it can't read my beautiful brown skin. Okay. Well, you know, I think that as we go forward in this week, what I would like people to do is the moment that they recognize that they're using some form of AI, that they stop and think about, how is this affecting my life? Now, you know, like Molly said, she got a great photo book out of her encounter with AI. And some of us are used to it when we call a bank and, you know, we have to push numbers, and that's AI figuring things out. And sometimes when we're making appointments, we think we're talking to a person, but we're really talking to AI using their human voice. So, you know, stop and think about how that AI is affecting your life, that encounter. And ponder whether it's enriched or not.
And I wonder, as, you know, perhaps as another program, we can talk about AI and how it's used, the voices that are used. I've seen articles about male voices versus female voices, regional voices, in terms of why they are selected. This is related to some of our conversations this morning, and as we evolve, I guess we can evolve, but whether or not, you know, how we are creating this new world that we are living in, and how do we accept it and change it. I hope all are well. Celeste has behind her a screenshot of Aurora Borealis, and those in the northern part of the United States this past week have seen some amazing awareness of the universe in recent. All things to say, stand in awe of. But at the same time, you know, the climate change clock has moved to under 7 years, which is dangerous in terms of how much time we have before we can
correct
the change in, you know, rising above 1.5 centigrees. A lot of work to be done.
Something we could put AI to work on, you know?
Yeah. Indeed.
Yes, indeed. Well, it was good listening to you and talking with you for our callers and to those who are listening. Don't forget, you can always hit us up with email. You know, you go to kboo.fm and type in More Talk Radio, and that will get you to our page, and you can send us an email via that.
Watch out for one another. Those of you who live in places where it's very warm this week, try to stay cool, look out for your neighbors, remain hydrated, and let's continue to make good change in our world. This has all been right. More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil.
I'm Celeste, and we'll hear you next week.